even though I live in Michigan now, I'm from Cleveland. I still identify as a Buckeye. I'm glad to be home in Ohio tonight. My name is Bobby. I'm a compulsive eater and I am also anorexic. Current abstinence date is March 8th, 2011, one day at a time. And that means that I've been refraining from compulsive eating, compulsive food behaviors, and maintaining a normal body. I came into OA in November of 1988. I really can't believe that this is 2022. I mostly came into OA to lose weight and treat it as a diet club, but I was also extremely desperate. And OA over the decades has proven to save my life and actually be a home for me. But I had no idea about that when I first came. I came to OA because I was out of control. I was compulsively eating and binging. And what prompted some of this behavior, though it was a several year trend, was I went through a breakup and I was devastated and just filled with emotions that I didn't know how to deal with and cope with. And I was going from one fast food restaurant to another, just stuffing my face, making myself sick, trying to numb myself out so that I wouldn't have any feelings. And I could avoid going home and feeling the terrible isolation of what it means, to be alone in my disease. And so it was that combined with the fact that I had probably eaten an entire bag of Halloween candy and I didn't want to blow Thanksgiving. So I came 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, desperately seeking help. And I was at my highest weight at that time. Now, mind you, that I also said I was anorexic. I am anorexic. And so for me, even being 2 pounds overweight can be like 200 pounds for somebody. And it's really not about the weight, but it's important for me to say that at that point, I was probably about 30, 35 pounds overweight. But the main thing is that I couldn't stop eating compulsively, and I was in the throes of binging and in the throes of my disease. I also want to say that my lowest weight actually occurred when I was in OA about 2 years later. And I was following a food plan, but I was restricting and became really underweight, like 15 pounds under what was a normal weight. But for me, my ribs were sticking out, my hip bones were sticking up. And I was in a huge place of really wanting to control, which I believe that anorexia, even with overeating, but even more so, is a disease of control. So now I'm maintaining a normal, healthy body weight, which is extremely important. So that's a little bit of a flavor of where I was when I came in and why I describe myself as a compulsive overeater and also as anorexic. I also didn't believe in a power greater than myself. I was spiritually really far removed. And I didn't believe in a higher power of my understanding, except for myself. And that got me into a whole lot of trouble. I was desperate. Again, I was isolating, binging, and emotionally, I was a wreck. And I came kind of screaming and kicking and not really wanting to go to a meeting, but I felt like I couldn't do it on my own. I'd been on so many diets in my life, yo-yoing up and down and up and down and up and down. And at this particular time, I didn't think that I really had another diet in me. I don't know what I thought I had. All I knew was that I was incredibly desperate. And that's how I came into the rooms. I really believe that I really hit rock bottom at that point in my life. I'd had a lot of bottoms, but I was really not in good shape. To back up for a moment, what it was like before, I come from a working class family. Both of my parents worked really hard for a living. I was the middle child of three, and I was raised in an environment where thin was good and fat was not. And I could have robbed a bank in my family and it would have been more accepted being a bank robber than putting on weight. That's how much fat phobia was in my home. And I began to put on weight around 12 or 13, which, is normal oftentimes for a lot of young girls who are going through adolescence and body changes and whatever, but it was treated like a crime. And that's when I was put on a diet. There was a lot of shaming and blaming that went along with that. And that was a trend that I maintained, this losing weight, gaining weight, losing weight, gaining weight. Then I found cigarettes. And it kept me skinny for about 3 or 4 years. But I was also to a place where I was smoking probably up to 3 packs a day by the time I was 21 years old. And I knew that I had to quit because it was making me sick. So as soon as I stopped smoking cigarettes, the weight came back on. And I'd get in relationships. I would lose myself. Then I would come out of that. Then I would go into these huge periods of wanting to control, take my essence or myself back. And I'd go on these diets, only then to find myself again dieting for a wedding or an event, and then eating compulsively when that was over and being back where I was before. I probably lost, I don't know, at least 100, 200, 300 pounds in the course of 2 decades from that kind of behavior. And it began to wreak havoc on me and on my body, because too much food and not enough food is not healthy. Fortunately, I didn't have my hair fall out. I didn't stop my menstrual cycle or have many other things happen that can happen with anorexia. But I definitely was not in a good place. So that's part of what brought me into Overeaters Anonymous, all of these different behaviors. In 1989, after I came into OA in 1988, I treated it like a diet club. And I kind of had a food plan, but I didn't have a sponsor. And at that time, we were only using AA literature, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and 12 traditions. And it was like walking into a room where I was hearing like Mandarin Chinese. I had no idea what people were talking about. The 12 steps were so out of my realm, or my world of understanding, that it was really because I was so desperate that I stayed. Eventually now, I guess you could call me a big book thumper. I love the big book. I get a lot of my guidance from the big book. I sponsor through the big book. It's like my lifeline. But back then, I really didn't understand what was being said in the meetings. In 1989, I went to a retreat. And at that retreat, something shifted in me. And I knew that I really needed to really pay attention to what was being said and also to get a sponsor, which is so important in this program. Because for the first 8 or 9 months, I didn't have a sponsor and I was trying to wing it on my own. So I got a sponsor, I got a food plan, and I began to seriously work the program. I developed a plan of eating, which I thought was good for me. It was a good plan of eating. I was eating a lot better than I ever did. I was committing my food, and I made the decision to weigh and measure because I had no boundaries, very few boundaries in my life. And if I didn't have boundaries around food, how could I have boundaries with other people? So many ounces could look like this much to me. And, half a cup could look like 2 cups, all of those sorts of things. So for me, I really needed that kind of structure because I was so out of control. And I don't tell anybody else to weigh and measure or to commit their food, but these are things that I do, and I began to do in 1989, that really worked. And in periods of time where I didn't do it is when I began to have the weight either creep on or I got too thin, but generally it was more about the weight creeping on. That was the tool that I put into effect. My first sponsor was great. The only problem is that we worked the steps up to step 8. We became extremely close friends. And I never did at 9, 10, 11, and 12. And we kind of like did this thing of co-sponsoring each other, but it was really more like a friendship. And I did have what was a food sponsor back then, where I wrote my food down and I committed it to that person, but we really did not work the steps. It was mostly support. So I really needed to get a sponsor that I worked the steps with. My program really began to change, even though I had years of abstaining from what people may want to call their alcohol foods or binge foods, trigger foods, and identifying those. My program really got stronger again when I got a new sponsor and we began to work the steps through the AA Big Book. And we read the Big Book from the prefaces all the way through page 164, and then the stories after that, and also work the 12 traditions. Because for me, working the steps wasn't enough. Working the steps was for me, but traditions were how to get along with everybody in this Zoom meeting tonight and other people in OA. And that began to make a huge difference for me when I really seriously worked the steps. I had never really looked at a lot of the language in the Big Book or read the doctor's opinion more about alcoholism, the solution, and all of the other things that the Big Book outlines. I've always been an addict, a compulsive person, and lived in my head a lot for reasons that go way back into my early childhood. I had a lot of fear, and so I obsessed about a lot of things. And in the doctor's opinion, I learned that a lot of my problem was compulsive thinking and obsessive thinking, which then led me to the allergy of the body and triggered me to want to eat compulsively. Food has always been my drug of choice. Even though I had abused alcohol when I was younger, I stopped. It wasn't on my food plan. And by the grace of God, I've probably had two alcoholic drinks in 34 years. That wasn't the main thing for me, though I've always been conscious that I could switch addictions because I'm an obsessive compulsive person. Arresting those obsessions and not picking up excess food for me has been such an important piece of my recovery. Abstinence is the most important thing in my life. By becoming abstinent and working on my emotions, my resentments, my fears, and everything else that goes along with that, I've also learned how to have feelings. The only feelings that I thought that I had were, "How are you, Bobby?" "I'm fine. How are you?" Or, "I'm angry." There wasn't anything in between. I didn't really know how to define what I was feeling because I was numbing my body out with food. I lived in this place of not feeling good enough, not getting enough love. And I tried to fill all of those empty places with food. Or if I didn't want to feel, I would also stuff myself. And there were times when I went through periods of extreme deprivation where I also used that as a way to numb out. Those aren't choices today. Today, I choose to have feelings, even those that aren't easy, but because food also can take away happiness. And I want to have a whole rainbow of feelings. That's one of the biggest gifts that this program has given me. The gift of abstinence, the gift of learning how to have emotions, not being afraid of emotions. And when I do have emotions that are those that can lead to resentments or selfishness, self-absorption, many other things, I have a program that I can work and people I can reach out to and talk to that I can recenter myself. A sponsor said to me one time, "There isn't a problem in life that there isn't a step that doesn't address it." And that's how I live my life today, by working the 12 steps. I also believe that not just working on the emotional and the physical aspect, it's extremely important to work on the spiritual. And to me, that's probably been the biggest challenge, but the most important thing in my life. The first step, I'm powerless over food. My life has become unmanageable, was not a super easy one for me to take. It was the spiritual principle of honesty. And it's extremely important for me to take that step. And I know that I'm powerless over food. And the second step, bringing the insanity to sanity and turning to a power greater than myself. The third step, I think, is the most pivotal. That's just my opinion. Because without having a higher power greater than myself, it has been extremely hard to recover. And today I do have that power. It's like a lifeline, like my heart, my brain, my body, everything. It's like everything encompassing. I trust that I can go to my higher power for everything. And I do that more and I trust that more. And that has really helped to accelerate my program. To me, actually, it's the most important thing, because if I'm in touch with my higher power, in touch with my emotions, and working the program a day at a time, and abstinence, all three of those pieces flow for me. And when I screw up, I have ways to go and take a look at that. I know that there sometimes can be the dance, the 1-2-3 dance, the first, second, and third step, then going back to the first, second, and third. Fortunately, I've never really done that, though I think it took me a long time to absorb the third step, even after I worked out 12 steps. But, you know, the steps were there for a reason. And 4 through 9 are the action steps. And I've taken a moral inventory, responsibility for myself, not living and being an adolescence for the rest of my life, but being a grown up and learning how to grow up. That's what OA has helped me with. So I have steps 4 through 9 to look at my side of the street, not point at your side of the street, but what's my responsibility? How can I admit that to another human being in step 5? How can I ask higher power to remove my shortcomings? some of which I went over already about the selfishness, self-centeredness, resentments, angers, many other things. And to take a look at those defects and to deal with them, they don't just like miraculously go away. No, I'm not totally relieved of every single thing. I work on them. I recognize when they come up. That's what part of working the steps is about. And then I release them. And if I've hurt somebody and made a mistake, including to myself, that's where steps 8 and 9 come in. And taking that responsibility and doing that, you know, I can be ego-driven and I can have a lot of pride. And steps 8 and 9 help me to work on those aspects. And step 10, taking the personal inventory, a spot inventory as the day goes by, that's what I do. I'm not so good at doing it at night. I have to admit, I want to do it more the next morning. So I'm working on doing it at night. And in places where I haven't practiced these principles, I take a look at that and I take action to rectify that. I can't afford to compulsively eat or not eat again. And if I don't take responsibility and do these things, that's what can happen. It's like playing Russian roulette. Abstinence is the most important thing in my life, not any person, place, or situation. And it's taken me a long time to realize that. Along with being a compulsive eater, I probably said that I was very codependent and had to deal with the aspect of people pleasing, which is probably in some ways even bigger because it was those behaviors that led me to want to eat compulsively. I've made huge changes in my life. I didn't have breakfast when I came to OA. I mean, I grabbed food, I catch as catch can. I was all over the block. It was, you know, grab a meal here, grab a meal there. Meals could last all night. Dinner could go into like 11, 12 o'clock at night from loneliness and just compulsive thinking and behaviors. For a number of decades, I go grocery shopping. I plan what I'm going to buy. I plan what I'm going to eat. I do a number of things in order to maintain abstinence. I cook food. I prepare. I already mentioned the weighing and measuring, which I don't do all the time out to eat, but I'm pretty good at knowing what my food portions are, but I definitely do it within my home. I have a daily journal that I use that I write down my food. I write in general. I write a gratitude list. I write the things that I like about myself, which was really hard at first. I write some things that I want to keep in mind for that day to focus on, especially things like, you know, patience, which I don't like, other things. And I live my life. I pray and I meditate first thing in the morning. I read for our four today voices of recovery. And then I read some other things that complement my OA program. That's my action plan. I do service. I speak at meetings. I go to meetings. Sometimes I go to 3, 4, 5 meetings a week. It just depends. Starting to go to a face-to-face meetings because a few more are opening up. Oh my God, it is so good to get out from behind a screen and see people and just be in the same room, you know, because this is such a disease of isolation. I can hide behind a camera. I don't want to hide. I want to be vulnerable and transparent. I want you to see me for who Bobby is today. I hid a whole lot of my younger years and teenage life into my 20s and early 30s. And I had to learn that I was okay. I was good enough and lovable and wanting to be seen. So going to meetings and going back face-to-face has really helped me. But of course, being in this opportunity is also great too. So I've met a lot of people, you know, through Zoom in the Zoom platform. Probably the most important thing that I do is pray to my higher power, meditate and get out of myself by doing service and reaching out to others, even a phone call, even opening a door at a shopping mall, even doing the smallest things are ways that, you know, I give back to what the universe has given to me and in this program. I came in as an atheist. I do believe in a power greater than myself. And the interesting thing is that I never denied my Jewish faith heritage or culture, but I didn't really practice it. And it's interesting that this program has brought me back around to looking at that and enveloping that and integrating it into the 12 steps. I say that because it's an important part of my spiritual identity and my recovery. I want people to know who I am in its entirety. The same is true with my sexuality. I never said that I was a lesbian in OA for I can't tell you how long or in my life. And so many things have changed around me being really who I am and being accepted for who I am. I've learned to grow up in this program. I've learned to work the program. I've learned to change my life by any means necessary. sponsorship. I can't say enough about it, and including me being a sponsor. One of the biggest gifts is sponsees, because it forces me to read the big book over and over again, and our literature, all of that. And it's so wonderful to see somebody just grow and change. That's the beauty of sponsorship as well. And also knowing when to say no and saying goodbye when it's necessary, and sponsoring somebody else if this is not a program for somebody. I hope that I've brought some part of me to you that's made a difference. And I just want to say the last thing about anonymity. I'm so grateful that the person is here from school and coming into and sharing this meeting with us. But who you see here when you leave here, let it stay here. Here, here is something that's extremely important. So thank you all. And with that, I pass.